You paid into Medicare for decades. Don't spend retirement limping. The Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. It's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000.
Thank you, Ryan Burrell. Steve Bertrand here. It's a Monday afternoon, time for the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm glad you're along with us. So you can send me an email at sbertrand@wgnradio.com or a tweet at Steve Bertrand or just, hi, how are you doing when you see me on the street? Will Flanagan and Jim Dahlke are in the studio. The Inno boys, the guys from Chicago Inno. Along most Mondays, they talk about tech. They follow things at chicagoinno.com, and you should too. Welcome to the show, boys.
Thanks, Steve. So much.
Steve, you're on the Twitter?
I'm on the Twitter.
All right.
Did I say the Twitter?
No.
It drives my kids crazy when they say we're going to go shopping at the Jewel.
Yeah. I say the Jewel, too.
Do you?
I say Jewel Osco. I go formal.
I see a couple out-of-towners over here, I guess.
Yeah. No kidding. Okay, so that's really interesting. Let's move on. Techstars just announced right there the 10 people are going to pick up some cash today. That came up earlier in the day. What are the highlights there?
Yeah, this is Techstars. It's a annual tech accelerator here in Chicago. They have different accelerators all over the country and in different classes. This is their seventh year here in Chicago, and they select 10 startups every year to participate in the three-month course where they get $120,000 in 3 months of close mentoring. And it's one of those things. There's a lot of accelerators sort of out there, but Techstars is one of the ones that seems to catch people's eye every year. It's sort of a very selective group that gets a name to the list. So 10 companies this year, 5 are from Chicago, 5 from outside of Chicago.
Well, that's significant, isn't it, that there are a number from outside the city. Why?
Exactly. I mean, companies see that as an opportunity to get mentorship that they're not getting elsewhere. So you have companies from Miami, companies from Portland, companies, even there's an LA startup in the Chicago group. So it's very sought after. People want to get into Techstars, so it's great to see half Chicago, half not. Some companies that are in the year we've already covered before, like Geo, which is doing invisible wearables.
Have we talked about that here?
We have. Yeah. We have. Okay. It's a wearable company from a hardware company from some veterans from Motorola have spun off and kind of doing their own thing now, sort of helping parents kind of track their kids with wearables that embed into their clothes. Also, Pact, which is another startup out of Northwestern. They do the on-demand school lunches. There's a real wide range of companies here in Techstars. And it's really interesting to see the kind of the breadth and diversity of the companies.
Tell me about Party. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, what I was just going to say is I think that, you know, one of the knee-jerk reactions is, you know, only 5 Chicago startups. Could we not fill the class? And this is a really good thing because what you're doing is you're bringing out-of-state startups into the city to be exposed to the tech community here, to its resources. And these are the type of things where these are early-stage businesses who are developing their model and learning to scale. And if they're kind of doing this in Chicago, why not stay? And that's where it's kind of an encouraging sign to bring these, to use Techstars as this kind of attracting mechanism to get really exciting startups.
It's like going to Hollywood to be in the movies, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Or going, you know, to Silicon Valley to succeed. Now some people are coming here.
Exactly.
Okay, well, let's talk dating.
Yeah.
There's a new, I like this idea. It's called Hello Truly, and it's a dating app. And Michael Heidemann, producer, you know, was quick to review it saying, and you guys said this too, it's so crowded in this field that it's hard to make anything work. But this is a dating app that actually relies on people talking to each other. Who's going to explain that?
Exactly, yeah. The app is called Hello Truly, and it just launched recently from a father and son team here in the city. So they are
that seems unusual.
A little, yeah. But you don't see a lot of father and son startups, especially in the dating scene.
In the dating world.
Right.
Is the dad still married? I wonder if they're born.
Oh, I didn't pry that far. But but it's really, the way they're taking an interesting approach. It's not really about chatting or swiping. Really, there's no communication hardly at all in the app. It's all about alerting you when there's another Hello Truly user in the same location as you. So another app user is in the same Starbucks or in the same bar, and you get a little notification. A push notification comes to your phone, lets you know that user is there. Then you can send a quote-unquote wave, which is really the only communication you can send, sort of just informing someone, hey, I'm also a user of this app, and I'm also in this room. Do you want to meet in person? So it's literally forcing you to not use the app and to meet someone face-to-face.
Okay, so you know you're in the restaurant with someone else who shares your...
Right. So there's some preferences that you set in the app. So, you know, there's a woman when a certain age that alerts me when that person's in the room, and then you can make that face-to-face communication.
Would I get her picture, or do I have to go around and ask people?
Yes, the profile kind of comes to your phone with the
picture.
Notification.
Okay.
Yes, so you're not just yelling someone's name across the room.
Excuse me, puppies? No, not you. Okay. So you get her picture, and you like what you see and what you read about her, so then you can just hit a little wave, and she'll get a little vibration on her phone.
Yep, she can wave back, and the two of you can actually get out of the app, put the app away. It's the founder calls it a very set it and forget
it. You can't chat.
No, you can't communicate, and that's the difference, right? I mean, the dating app scene is so crowded that it's tough to kind of make inroads there, but they're doing things a little bit different.
Yeah, I mean, great ideas do not a successful tech startup make. I mean, you need people. You need a lot of people to have this downloaded on their phone, and guess what? People have stopped downloading apps. The app business is really hard right now. The average person in the country is downloading zero new apps
a month. Yeah, I read that. I mean, Dahlke wrote this story, and I read that the average is zero a month.
Yeah.
And that used to be, now you guys are, again, I'm older than you, but that used to be a sign of sort of being hip. Oh, let me page through my apps.
That's a whole new conversation, right? I mean, why, you have to have a really, really good reason if you're a tech company or any company to make an app. Don't just make an app to make one because people aren't going to download it. I mean, if you're Uber and people are going to download that app. But I mean, unless you have a really good reason to need to use an app, you're not going to download one. However, dating is kind of in a field of its own. I mean, I think that people who maybe strike out on a few dating apps will still give others a shot if they're trying to do the online dating thing.
What does that mean then? So this conversation with Mike had me looking at, I have like Real Clear Politics on Politico. I have those apps on my phone. Mm-hmm. You're telling me that people aren't using those apps to go to those websites. They're getting there elsewhere.
I think it depends on the news consumer. I do think some people like news apps, but I mean, for me personally, a lot of the news is coming through Twitter. So I'm opening the Twitter app to get a lot of that news. So why would I download the Politico app when I know that I can get my news from Politico through Twitter?
So it's just
I want to stick, me personally, through one interface.
Yeah, and I think one of the issues with Hello True, it's for a lot of these apps, you can kind of grow by catering to that, you know, your core users, and then you grow from there and you build this pilot audience. But Hello Truly, you kind of need a lot of people for this to work. Because if you're walking around, you're never having your phone buzz, you're going to feel pretty self-conscious.
One thing they do have are hotspot maps to show you where users have been in the past.
Right,
so you're likely to see, hey, you know, five Hello Truly users were at, you know,
this
restaurant.
You don't need to run, Steve. How desperate is that?
You're going to sprint to the coffee shop. You run to this coffee shop, and you're like, oh, it's not a hotspot anymore. Then you run to the next one. All right, Will Flanagan and Jim Dahlke are here from Chicago, and we're going to take a break. And then when we come back, we're all going to get in our personal drones and fly to Lake Michigan to cool off. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It is the Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand, along with Jim Dahlke and Will Flanagan from Chicago. You know, and so one of the stories that Karis wrote, I guess, this week is about this startup at Northwestern where they want to. Sometimes we start using words like a drone, right?
Yep.
To me, this sounds like a personal helicopter. What's the difference between a personal helicopter and this drone that they're working on at Northwestern?
Drones are a little hotter than personal helicopters, Steve. It's all about just kind of sticking with the moment. And this is a drone for helicopter. They know this is a moonshot idea. Basically, picture a drone big enough to hold one person, and the idea is that, you know, you always say, oh, you know, it's going to take you 30 minutes to get there, but it's just a mile by the birds, how the bird flies. It's trying to get you there through the path of the birds. So it would go like up to 60 miles per hour. It could carry you for up to 35 minutes, and you would treat it like an Uber. You know, the goal would be by like 2023, you're dialing these up. It's swinging by. It's picking you up. And it's taking you to your destination.
That's what I missed in it. So you're not going to own one. You're going to contract
on demand drone for humans.
Right.
The Uber for drones for humans.
And is this a moonshot? That seems to me like this is going to happen.
Well, I think the reason it's a moonshot is because think about all of the policy involved and all the regulation with Airbnb.
Right.
You know, a pretty sound idea. Then now take that and multiply it for, again, mini helicopters flying around cities, taking you to places. if you think city council has a tough time agreeing on these on-demand static services, how is anyone going to agree on that? So one of the things that Kitty Hawk is doing that's really interesting is that they know this is going to be tough. They know if this works, this is going to be a fight. So they're not spending their time and resources on manufacturing. They're spending it on the design and working closely with the FAA so that if this gets approved, they're going to have the approved design to activate.
It could be like every day is the practice weekend for the Air and Water Show with the, you know, everything flying around all on top. Don't you look out the window, see helicopters going left and right?
Yeah. And what I love about this idea is I think everybody talks about, like, where are we with the Jetsons future? You know, like, where's the driverless cars and the robots making us coffee? And this is, I mean, that's just not what tech is. You know, tech is software that makes handling contracts more efficient. But this is kind of one of those Jetsons ideas, and it's cool to see it being worked on in Chicago.
And what a great name, Kitty Hawk.
Right. Right,
for an autonomous drone helicopter startup.
Although the flights that Kitty Hawk didn't all go that well, but they got better.
Right. That won't be woven into
the
branding.
It was an important first step.
Okay. Let's go to Tech Week. I know that wrapped up last week, right? And again, you were talking about startups and competitions, and there was some money handed out there. I want to ask you about one of the companies that picked up some cash, I think, PARCX. Right?
Well, PARCX was they were a finalist, so they didn't end up winning the launch competition.
Well, here's why I ask, because it seems like, wow, this is a great idea.
Yeah.
Tell me about PARCX.
So PARCX is really cool. So for some reason, Chicago is the hub for parking innovation. ParkWiz and Spot Hero, those on-demand parking apps, are two of our fastest-growing startups. And PARCX is a little different because it bills itself as the Airbnb for parking. And the reasons it's different is Spire and ParkWiz, they take supply off the market. They're working with big parking garages and seeing, oh, there's a spot over here for X amount of dollars, go here. What ParkX is doing is it's adding supply to the market. So it's saying, Steve, you have a parking spot next to your house that you're never using.
Right.
List it, and now all of a sudden you're making a little extra cash.
So you could rent out your garage, really.
Exactly. I had a really interesting conversation with the CEO of ParkX, actually, who we had a really long conversation about driverless cars, and they see their startup being a really interesting part of the driverless car feature because you'll be able to rent out your garage to a driverless car. So when the car drops you off for lunch, the car will come back, stay in a parking spot for a couple hours, and go out and make its next trip.
Yeah, and they're really a service for the neighborhoods.
Right.
And also think like sporting events and you know, big music concerts that are happening outside the city. It's impossible to find parking at those types of events, and this is a place where, you know, if I live in an area where there's one big festival or sporting event a year, you know, I'm just going to turn my driveway into a mini parking garage, house six cars.
Well, it's already happening outside of Wrigley now anyway.
Sure thing. That's Will Flanagan and Jim Dahlke from the Chicago Inno. Thanks very much for coming by today, guys. You can read a lot more of that at chicagoinno.com. When we come back, after the headlines, we're going to talk to Amy Wilkinson. She's a lecturer at Stanford University, the author of a book called The Creator's Code, What Great Innovators Have in Common. You might be surprised. That's coming up on the Business Lunch. You're listening to the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. So are entrepreneurs born that way, or is success available to all of us, to you, to me? That's something Amy Wilkinson has been looking at. She's a lecturer at the Stanford School of Business and the author of The Creator's Code. And she joins us now on a phone line. Amy, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Oh, thank you. I'm delighted to be with you.
So tell me about that. Can any of us become a successful creative entrepreneur?
Yes. So I interviewed 200 of the top founders, entrepreneurs in the United States to distill the six skills that they have in common. And the idea is they're very learnable, teachable, and accessible skills. So any one of us can create an idea. This book is called The Creator's Code. So we can create a new idea, and the code is with six skills we can actually scale that idea. So I think it's very much available.
When you talk to those 200, I mean, I don't think you didn't have the six ideas in mind when you began the conversations, correct?
No. So this is the largest data set right now in the United States on high-scale or high-impact entrepreneurs. So I went out with open-ended questions to people like the founders of Chipotle, fast casual restaurants, Chobani, Yogurt, Tesla Motors, SpaceX, to try to figure out what the entrepreneurs had in common. so that more of us could kind of hone those skills and be more able to create and scale our ideas.
I want to talk about what those six are, but before we do, I just wonder, the people you talked about, were they aware that they were in possession of these skills?
So it's kind of interesting. I spent 5 years doing the research on this book, and they are very, very curious if their skills are similar or different from other people that have scaled companies that are similar or different. So they were not, thinking, here are the six skills, and I will go do them. That's the advantage now of having the roadmap or the blueprint, is that we do know what these people have in common. So they were kind of inventing their own pathway, but now with this data set, it's hopefully more able to advantage those of us who want to create and scale ideas.
So in a way, each of them was driving down a road. They're one of 200 roads. They're all driving down the road, and they don't realize that they're in similar cars, or the road makeup is the same. They're just on their own individual trip.
They're doing similar things. That's the thing that's challenging about being an entrepreneur, is everyone is on his or her sort of own adventure, right, own journey of trying to create and build a new idea. So entrepreneurs, now there's quite a lot of curriculum. We're trying to teach this at the college level, right, at the graduate school level. But really, everyone is out there kind of as a lone ranger. And so that's where it's helpful to know what the skills are of some of the great entrepreneurs so that we can emulate them.
All right. So I run into my roadblock very early in the book, because you say creators discover what fuels them. And that can almost be a paralyzing proposition for many of us, to try to figure out what fuels us. How do they find out?
Well, so skill one is called find a gap. And, you know, I think a lot of people find gaps in different ways. So to this, you know, what fuels you? Some people solve a problem. So the Under Armour founder, Kevin Plank, his problem was that he was University of Maryland's sweatiest football player. He was just not a good football player, and he worked out every single day and was sweating through his jersey. His problem began fueling him. And he went and figured out how to not have a cotton undershirt under his football uniform, but a synthetic fabric, and that became Under Armour, right? And then he has scaled up a huge sports brand, a retail brand, to try to make athletes better. But that, his own problem, is one of the things that fueled him. There are other examples, like the Chipotle founder, Steve Ells, who's a classically trained chef. He's out of the New York Culinary Academy, so he loves food. I mean, he loves cooking. He loves culinary art. So that's another thing that fuels people, is what they love. And he then basically took this idea of cooking for the line. As people line up in a format, you could have faster cooking, but not fast food, right? It's not a frozen hamburger patty that's just reheated. Chipotle as a fast casual restaurant, people are cooking right in front of you in a casual dining format. So you know, those are two things. Look for what you love. Look for a problem to solve.
You say that the successful entrepreneurs collaborate with unlikely allies. What does that mean?
Yeah, so you really have to draw brain power to you. You have to harness the cognitive diversity of other people. So you want people who think differently from you to help you solve the problem or build the company that you're trying to build. So there are online and offline ways to do that. Certainly online, you could award a prize, like a prize competition, and draw somebody towards you that might want to win a prize and help you come up with a solution. Or you could assemble a flash team, is what I'm calling it, like a team that would just come together, very diverse people, maybe an anthropologist and a computer scientist and a journalist and, you know, a nurse or somebody, to solve a healthcare-related problem. Right, in a tight team that then, after the splash team is done solving that problem, disbands and goes on and does other independent work. So there's just a lot of ways of thinking about how do you attract a different point of view and people who will think differently to help you.
I was talking to the novelist Alan First last week. He writes spy novels, World War II spy novels, and he said that he became a good writer when he moved out of the United States, when he moved to Paris, and then looked at his world from the vantage point of Parisians. When he looked back at the U.S., that's when he was able to better understand who he was and what he needed to do. And I suppose that applies. That's sort of what you're talking about here when you say meet with other allies, people who have a different view of your world.
Yes, you definitely want to try to step outside of your comfort zone and see things fresh and new. And, you know, curiosity is an overriding characteristic of any really successful entrepreneur. So you need to look at things and ask questions and be curious and see them with fresh eyes, see with a different point of view. Traveling often does that. You know, exposing yourself to other people does that. Questioning why not? Often you can spark an insight. So, yes, I completely agree with the sentiment.
Another of the steps, the sixth, in fact, is generosity. And you say that generosity makes creators more productive. How does that happen?
So, this skill is called gift small goods. And a small good would be a small kindness or, you know, a generous thing that you could do for a colleague in the workplace, a five-minute favor, right? The reason why that makes people more productive now, and this is really in the last 5 years, I would say, is that our reputations are transparent. So we will know. I can look on LinkedIn or I can Google or I can look on social media. I can send a text message to someone that's worked with you that I can find very visibly and ask about the reputation of a colleague. Are you good to work with? Are you helpful? Do you assist?
When I read that, I'm thinking that this is some sort of mystical thing. If you do good for others, you know, you will be open to good happening to you. But what you're saying is you're just building a reputation of someone who's good to work with.
Yeah, so we used to say nice guys finish last,
right?
And what basically this shows is nice guys finish first. And the reason is because we will know your reputation. It will be very transparent. Technology, and this is in the last 5 years, you know, you can't really hide. The same is true if you cheat people. So if you are actually misbehaving or ripping people off or stealing resources, we will know that as well. And there's a big study right now out of Harvard showing if you are a defector in this way, you are not collaborating, you will be isolated. You will be cut off. People will choose not to work with you.
The name of
so
the
this
book.
This is actually practical.
The name of the book is The Creator's Code. It's out in paperback now. Amy Wilkinson is the author. Okay, so you've got this experience now, hardcover last year, so it's behind you a little bit. Has it changed you, or how have your discoveries changed who you are today?
Oh, I think it changes everything about how I see the world. So I am an entrepreneur. I had a very early company that I started. It was a cross-border art export business. And, you know, it makes me want to get back and do that. More. And it just, ups the curiosity. It ups the work with purpose. That's another big overriding principle of this research is entrepreneurs who really are successful, who will go to scale, they do things that matter.
Yeah, it's not about the cash so much.
No, it's really not. It's about looking for a problem to solve that matters to you, that will matter to other people. It's looking to pursue your passion. I love something and so do a lot of other people. Or you want to create, this is why it's the creator's code, you actually fundamentally want to create something in the world that's lasting beyond yourself. And so when people believe very much that their work matters, that fuels them forward. And I'd say that to me is the most overriding thing. I want this book to matter. And I think in the future, my lens will be even more on that, doing work that matters for your time and for having made a contribution, right? And that's a different mindset than a lot of traditional business. But I think it is the way that people are moving forward.
Amy Wilkinson, nice to talk to you today. Thank you very much. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's a Monday afternoon. Thanks very much for tuning in. Eddie Liu is in the studio. He's a co-founder of ShiftGig. Now, we've talked about ShiftGig a few times on the program with the boys from Chicago Inno and elsewhere, but it's nice to make your acquaintance. Welcome to the Business Lunch, Eddie.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Steve.
You know, and I was just telling you off the air, I've got a 20-year-old daughter and an 18-year-old son, and I think that this is how they're going to, you know, find their jobs, their temporary jobs in the future through something like ShiftGig. Tell me what ShiftGig is.
Yeah, ShiftGig is an online marketplace that connects businesses with hourly workers. Today, we're focused in the food service, hotel, retail, and marketing activation in sectors, and we allow people an opportunity to pick up a shift or a whole series of gigs via their mobile phone, and we allow businesses to augment their labor force.
So say you've got someone sitting on the couch in the basement of your house, I don't know who that would be. And, you know, but there's someone who could be do some wait staff or busing tables or something like that. They would go on to shift gig and see where there's a restaurant who needs their services.
Yeah, it could be a restaurant. It could be events. We had people over at Gay Pride Parade this weekend, and I'm sure we'll have people at Lollapalooza coming up.
Explain that. How did it work? Then the Pride, who hired those people?
In the event management company.
Okay. Okay. And so people would go on to shiftgig.com, see that there's these slots available. They would just sign up and just show up and work.
Yeah. So actually they get pre-qualified and vetted ahead of time.
Okay.
So they go through a online assessment through either a Skype interview or an in-person interview, and they get qualified. Once they get qualified, they actually have access to the various gigs on the mobile app, the ShiftGig mobile app.
Tell me about, when I think of this, I'm like, well, okay, the idea is that anyone can be a waiter or a waitress or anyone can bus tables, but that's not really true. I mean, there's a certain sort of infrastructure you need to learn at each restaurant. How do you get around that? I mean, I would think it would still would take time to train these temporary workers every time they go to a new job.
Yeah, so most of our shifts aren't actually held at restaurants. They're actually held at a hotel or held at an event,
uh-huh,
and maybe at a museum, et cetera. So it's not so
you're not really learning the routines.
Not necessarily
like
the restaurant menu,
okay,
per se. We do have restaurants as clients, but it's not necessarily a server position where you have to know this restaurant menu.
Okay, so this is ShiftGig, and it's ShiftGig.com.
Mm-hmm.
People can check that out. Okay, that's the little minute sort of thing. Let's blow it up a little bit and look at the bigger picture. This is how we're going to be finding jobs one day soon, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the future of work, Steve.
Tell me about that.
Yeah. Lots of societal factors are changing. I mean, minimum wage just in Chicago is going this year from $10 to $10.50, but on the path to $13 in Chicago. Across the country, minimum wage is going up to $15 in some states. And also with Obamacare, many big companies are choosing to lower the average work week from 35 hours to 27 and a half.
Right. So you envision that there will be people who have a full-time, in a way, shift gig job?
I think people will have a primary job, and they'll supplement their income with a second job or a third job, or possibly using a mobile app to be an Uber driver,
right,
or a Grubhub driver, or some other shift gig part-time worker.
It's an Uber economy in a way, right?
A gig economy, yes.
A gig economy. And have you seen your business growing? Have you seen it moving that way?
Oh, we've seen tremendous growth over the last 2 years. So we started as a web business, and we pivoted to this mobile business. And a year and a half ago, we were in Chicago and New York. Today, we're in 12 cities.
Wow.
We've seen tremendous growth.
ShiftGig.com. Check it out. Eddie Liu, thanks for coming by. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Steve.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.